The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Second, that we aren't passionate, committed, dedicated to the Boston Red Sox, you're wrong, you're a liar, and I'll correct you on it because it's total BS. If you think for 1 second that we aren't passionate, committed, dedicated to the Boston Red Sox, you're wrong, you're a liar, and I'll correct you on it because it's total BS. If you think for 1 second that we aren't passionate, committed, dedicated to the Boston Red Sox, you're wrong, you're a liar, and I'll correct you on it because it's total BS.
Welcome back to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. What you just heard was a clip that's about a year old from Sam Kennedy, basically calling all of us Red Sox fans liars for questioning the integrity of how they approach each offseason. And he did walk back those comments in the days or hours after, but I don't know. It still strikes a nerve, and we're still doing business the same exact way and questioning things more and more every day. So I am Terry Cushman, joined tonight by Evan Kay. Evan, how are you?
I'm doing well, Terry, doing well. Waiting on Bregman news, whether it's good or bad. I just wanted to be over with, ready for Fort Myers.
Man, I feel like we've been waiting on news since Dave Dombrowski lost his job. But all right, so let's just get into where we're at here. His market seems to be picking up steam. I mean, I think we've had some false alarms throughout the winter with various people. This could potentially be one of them, but apparently last Wednesday, according to reports, I think his name is Chandler Rome. He's a part of the Houston Astros beat corps. Basically the Astros opened the door and are telling Bregman's camp they are in fact willing to bring him back on the same exact offer that's on the table, which was worth roughly 6 years, $152 million, so roughly about $25 million a year, which I think is a fair value, honestly. Astros also had their winter event this weekend. We had ours probably two or three weekends ago, so a lot of players were giving, you know, comments on whether they want him back, and that clubhouse desperately wants Alex Bregman back in Houston, despite the Paredes trade, despite the Christian Walker signing. And Jose Altuve has even said, I will play left field if it means Alex Bregman could come back and play for the Houston Astros. So where are we at?
To me, Terry, this might be a contrarian take for the Bastards of Boston Baseball. I think we have a really good shot. Me and you talked prior to the show, and I think we're on two different sides of the river here, but I really genuinely think Alex Bregman is going to be a Red Sox, and here's why. You know, Chandler Rome came out and said, well, the Astros have this offer. It's always been on the table. Bregman's welcome to come back. And then, you know, of course, the Presley trade happened, and people start freaking out on Twitter, as Twitter does. And in my opinion, if that offer has been on the table and Alex Bregman wanted to be there and saw a fit for himself in Houston, why would he not click accept months ago? I think he doesn't see a spot for himself in Houston. You know, they have Paredes. They're getting younger. That's clearly their goal. Aside from Altuve, they're trying to, you know, keep their dynasty rolling, right? So they're trying to get younger. They signed Paredes, who's been a top prospect for years. Or they traded for him, sorry. You're going to keep him at third. I mean, if you want to move him to second, fine. But Altuve is not playing left field. Okay. If Tristan Casas came out and said, "Hey, I want Vladdy. I'm going to go play right field," we would laugh at his face. Tristan Casas, you're not a right fielder. Jose Altuve, you're not a left fielder. You're 5'8". You have a second baseman's arm. You have a great bat, but you're aging. You're not playing left field. It's not going to happen. And when he's not playing left field, he's going to sit at second base. He's not a DH. You have Jordan for that. Where does Bregman slot into that lineup? He just doesn't. That's the fact of the matter. And everyone's talking about how, you know, they traded Presley, so they're trying to clear up space. They ate most of his money. That was a Presley wanted out type deal. They ate most of his money. I think the prospect they got in return is TBD. So maybe they ate the money to get a higher end prospect, kind of like the Mets did with Scherzer and Verlander a few years ago. But I just don't see Bregman going back. And then, you know, elephant in the room, Alex Bregman can't hit for crap at Comerica Park. He doesn't want to go to Detroit. He's using them as leverage. Then the Blue Jays are going to be the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays aren't on anyone. Ted Williams come on the free agent market, and the Blue Jays would make him an offer, and they'd finish third. That's what would happen. I just don't know if the Red Sox have a ton of competition for Alex Bregman right now. We had talked prior to the show, Terry. I think a lot of those dark horse teams that generally sign these guys later into the year, like more recently the Diamondbacks, like the Corbin Burns or the Giants with Matt Chapman, like all these types of teams that can shell out money when they need to. Where else does he fit? The Cubs ain't going to spend that money. I mean, I just don't know where else he goes. I think he made a mistake by telling Boris, "I want to go to the Red Sox." And I think Boris said, "You know what? The Red Sox probably pay up for a guy. He fits perfectly in their roster." There's a reason that got so much hype around national media throughout this entire offseason. Bregman to the Red Sox. He's such a perfect fit. Bregman, Bregman, Bregman. And yeah, he is a perfect fit. But why would the Red Sox shell out their best offer early in the offseason? They wouldn't. They wouldn't. And now we're at 4 years. He wants five. They're going to wait a little bit longer. And I think Alex Bregman, being a creature of habit like he is, he wants a contract, and he wants to be where he wants to be. He wants to have a leadership role, an everyday spot, and he wants to sit at third base, or, you know, second base, I suppose. But both those spots are taken on the Astros, and the Red Sox have a glaring opening for a right-handed, I guess, power bat, or a solid right-handed bat, and a leader. And I think he slots in perfectly, and I think this is where he ends up.
So in regards to the sincerity of whether or not the Astros really want him, I mean, it would be really easy for them to say, "No, no, absolutely not. We have moved on. It is a complicated fit, and you guys need to stop bombarding us with this." So, like, what's the benefit of them taking that angle?
Well, if you look at the guy who really matters over there, Dana Brown, he said it's a long shot. So if we want to play that game, Dana Brown said it's probably not going to happen. So, of course, the player is going to be like, "Yeah, that's my friend. I want him back. It's not my money. Let's sign him. I don't care where he plays. I don't care what we do. He's my friend. We played together for 5-10 years and won championships. Yeah, I want Alex Bregman back." You know, what are they going to say? They're not going to, "Well, you know, screw that guy. We don't have a spot for him." Of course they want him back. Dana Brown, the guy who makes the calls over there, it's probably not going to happen. It's a long shot. Joe Espada, similar to Alex Cora. "Yeah, he's a great player. I want him back. Of course I do." But again, Joe Espada's not cutting that check. So I don't see it happening. You know, I think Bregman served his time honorably in Houston, and he's probably going to have his number retired at the end of the day. And, you know, he's one of those, you know, those guys in Houston. But at the end of the day, there's just not a spot on that roster. They're trying to get younger, and they just don't want to be disrespectful and kick him out the door.
But the thing that I'm still having a hard time separating myself from here is, like, if that offer is on the table, it would be really easy to say, "No, it's not." It would probably be a different offer, but we're open to bringing him back. Like, nobody's denied that offer is not on the table. I keep getting tripped up on that.
For sure. But that offer's been on the table since the beginning of the offseason. Well, probably into the season, if we're going to be honest with ourselves, right? So I think, to circle back to my point about the Ryan Presley trade and whatever, that offer's on the table with Presley on the roster, with Kyle Tucker on the roster, pre-Paredes trade. There's a lot of moving parts that have happened, and that organization has chose a direction since then. And yeah, sure, we're going to leave this offer out on the table. Fine. Yeah, there's an offer out on the table. But no one's really confirmed that is the offer from the front office. the front office has no reason to confirm or deny the validity of that report. Who's to say the front office isn't like, you know, Breggy, you don't fit here, but you know, if there's any way we can help you, let me know. Oh, we want, you know, we're not going to deny the validity of this report to get you leverage on another team. Sure. We're just not going to say anything. They haven't said yes or no, like you just said, right? They could just be trying to help, you know, frankly, their friends get a better offer, get some more years, get some more money.
Yeah, I'm not willing to die on the hill, but I just feel like I have to take it somewhat at face value. And I don't think they want to help the Detroit Tigers. I don't think they want to help AJ Hinch try to land this guy for, you know, big money after Detroit just tossed him out. And the Red Sox, I mean, I don't think it's in the, I mean, we have a long history with the Astros. They've gotten the better of us to a little bit, but I just don't think they want to help. We're all the wrong teams.
Are they helping us though? I think they've accepted that he's gone. I think they've accepted that he wants a role at third base or second base, and those roles are taken in Houston. They chose their guy. They extended Altuve. I don't think they're helping us. I think they're hurting us. They're making it more expensive. They're making us wait longer. They're making us get nervous about it. They're making us spend our money. That's my opinion. I don't think they're helping us at all. I think they went, you know what? He's not coming back, and you know, we're going to help him gain leverage, and you know, we're going to hurt their payroll. That's what we're going to do. We're not going to let him go for $400 or whatever. He's going to get five. He's going to get $130. He's going to make his money. And you know, if we can assist with that for his sake and for our sake, then perfect.
Well, let's get into the way the offers are structured right now. So at least the Tigers, multiple teams have offered him 5-year deals. So I don't know who those teams would be if we're at four. So the Tigers, potentially the Cubs, maybe. One angle we haven't looked at, and the Cubs have been linked to him in the last couple weeks. I don't know. Maybe the Cubs taking that contract, maybe having Presley, maybe that gives them a slight edge. I can't see that it would be a major edge, but having a recent longtime teammate with him in Chicago, maybe that gives them an
Tucker
edge.
Too.
What's that? Well,
Tucker's there
Tucker,
too.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know what the motive is there, but what frustrates me, I don't think the Red Sox are sincere. I really don't. The Red Sox should be at 5 years. They should absolutely be at 5 years. And you look at the Soto deal. I don't remember what it was in terms of years, but we were $65 million off. So we were at least 1 year off, I'm guessing. With Max Fried, we were a year off. Basically, the AAV was essentially the same on both deals. We were a year off. And now with Bregman, the most attainable guy of the whole bunch, the one guy who's on record saying, I'd love to play at Fenway Park, we're a year off. I mean, when does it end? I'm gonna do a list here. You've seen it. Thought I had it up. Let me just do it.
Well,
on
while
phone.
You pull that up, I'll talk a little bit for a second while you're pulling that up. As far as the year off contract goes, I mean, a very different situation. But if you look at the Duran situation, you know, however you might want to think about them not meeting, you know, pre-arb, you know, pre-hearing at $4 million like Duran wanted. The Red Sox offered 3.5, I think it was. Before they even went to the hearing, the Red Sox were able to work out a deal somewhere in the middle and then tack on some crazy incentives for Duran. I think he could make up to $12 million if he wins MVP or something like that. So who's to say they're not trying to work on something like that with Bregman? Like, here's four up front, whatever, 25 AAV, whatever it might be, with a mutual option or a team option or a player option, however they want to hash it out for 5 and 6. I think the Red Sox are trying to play smart here. In case a guy like Campbell takes off in the infield, then what do? You have Grissom, you have Campbell, and then you have Bregman just kind of floating around. And next thing you know, the Bregman contract gets ridiculed like the Trevor Story contract. So I think they're a little bit tentative to reach out and just go get their guy like they did with Story, because of the Story contract and the freak injuries he's had. But I don't think they're that far off. I think 1 year and, you know, $20 million isn't that far off. I think a deal is inbound, but I'll let you go, Terry.
Yeah, I don't think there's any scenario where he takes a discount. I really don't. They're going to have to – he's probably going to have opt-outs in his deal anyway, but he's going to take – I think he's going to want the most money at this point. I just – I don't – and I can't see Boris saying, yeah, that's smart. And I know it's ultimately up to Bregman. He's the player, but I just – I can't get there. And if we're being real here – Bregman's not a fit for us. We're going to have a second baseman making $700,000 compared to $25 million. You know, I mean, he's just not a fit. The thing that I'm really fixated on is the lying, is the constant misdirection. Well, let's get into that right now, and we'll come back to it. So for the listening audience, Jason referenced this on the last episode where he got it from the Sports Hub, and 95% of our deals, or maybe it was even a crazier number, like 98% of them have all been 1 year deals. So this morning, you know, I had some time on my hands. I went through year to year and compiled the list of all of the free agents. These don't include trades of guys that were controllable. These are financial commitments to free agents. So this is the list. It's not a very big one. Spoiler alert. These are all the guys that got more than 1 year. In 2020, nobody did. Nobody got more than 1 year. That was Bloom's first year. And that was a punt year to get under the luxury tax. That's why we traded Mookie. That's why we sent David Price. You know, so none of us were crying foul. We all understood it. And it was a 60-game season, as it turned out anyway. So that was the year to do it. 2021, we only offered two multi-year deals. We only signed two, rather. Those went to Kike Hernandez and Hirokazu Sawamura. 2022, three players got multi-year deals. Trevor Story, Jake Diekman, and I put James Paxton in there because it was a player option. Therefore, it was guaranteed money to the player if, in fact, he exercised that option. 2023, three players got multi-year deals. Masataki Yoshida, Kenley Jansen, Chris Martin. Two of those were fine, actually. And quite frankly, unprecedented. We'd never spent that much money at the back end of our bullpen ever. So I didn't really have a problem. I wasn't a Yoshida guy, as the audience knows. We're almost done here. 2024, two players got multi-year deals. Lucas Giolito via a player option. And Liam Hendricks, who never pitched last year. And then so far this year, after a press conference in November where Sam Kennedy announced all these grand plans to finally be that big market team that we've all been waiting for, we've only signed one multi-year deal, Patrick Sandoval, who might not pitch this year. He might, but it doesn't usually happen. June will be 12 months, so there's a shot for maybe August or September, but we'll see. But that's it. In the post-Dombrowski era, let me just count them out loud here. 5, 8, 11. 11 players got multi-year deals since the day Dombrowski got fired. Most of them were not premium talent. I would say Trevor Story. I mean, it didn't work out well. And Kenley Jansen. The rest of them, none of those were premium guys. None of those were big market guys that, you know, that should have gotten them. And here we are again. It's the same winter. It's the same winter all over again, except we've made one trade, which wasn't really that consequential. We still have a beast of a farm system. So many guys are blocked. We just spent a couple minutes trying to fit Alex Bregman into this lineup, and it's hard because we have a robust farm system. So yeah, go ahead.
I agree that the Crochet deal, you know, it didn't hurt too much, and you know, it was nice to see for sure. A lot of people compare it to the Sale trade. I don't know if I'm there yet, but we'll see. As far as the free agency list goes, I think for the players we signed, those were good deals, but I would have liked to see us go get the guy like you were attailing to. I'm pretty sure Corey Seager was available in that time frame or somewhere close to there. Trey Turner. There's a lot of premier players that definitely could have gotten a lot of money from the Boston Red Sox and probably would have loved to play here. So that list is pretty depressing, I'm not going to lie. When Masataka Yoshida is one of your, you know, top paid free agents, it's not great. I think Yoshida gets a bad rap because of that contract. Unfortunately, I think he'd be a great, you know, $3 million a year player. I think that he'd be a great bench piece. He'd be loved. But that was a depressing list, Terry. Kind of took the wind out of my sails there.
Well, let me ask you this. How old are you now? I'm 41.
I am 23.
You're 23? Oh, geez. Sure, I thought you were, I thought you were like upper 20s. Jeez.
Nope, just feel it.
All right. So this is even better. So how old were you in 2018 when we...
2018, 17.
17. Yeah. Now, think of, you were a teenager the last time we were like legitimately good. And 2021, it was what it was.
That was a fluke.
It was.
2021 was 2013 without like Shane Victorino, but yeah.
Yeah, but we didn't have our Lester and Lackey either. You had Evaldi, and Erod was a big game guy, but still, I mean, that team just, it got, we almost missed. That final week of the season, we had the Orioles before the Nationals, and we dropped 2 out of 3 to the Orioles, who were not good. They were not good.
We had a sweep.
And then
we had that huge home run.
And then, so we literally just got hot is what we did. We went from nearly blowing it. And I've said on the podcast before, I think that run hurt us. I think it made the front office think, oh, this is all we have to do. And that's all they've done. And they keep trying to do it. But yeah, so it's the same offseason. Minus the Crochet trade, who still doesn't have an extension, by the way. I'm tired of it. I think more likely than not we're ending up with nobody. And I listened to Chris Cotillo and Sean McAdam a couple days ago on one of their recent episodes. They think we're getting Randall Grichuk. They think that's the move.
I mean, to follow suit. You know, Hunter Renfro, Adam Duvall, Tyler O'Neill was a little bit better, but, you know, same idea. White guy, righty, power hitter. I mean, it follows suit. I wouldn't be shocked. Would I be a little bit annoyed? Sure. But I think we just got to kind of take it for what it is. I don't know. I hope it's Bregman, but if it's Grichuk, then it's Grichuk. What do you think about Bregman? I think if Bregman doesn't come here, if he goes to Chicago, I think we got to go get Seiya Suzuki. I think they're going to be super right-handed heavy. And, you know, they need a roster spot. I don't know. He might become more available if he goes to Chicago, but I don't know. I'm just throwing crap at the wall, hoping it sticks here.
I think we have to get an infielder, really. I just think we're too crowded out there. Trevor Story gets hurt. You're gonna deeply regret not getting an infielder.
What if Seiya was to DH? That was kind of my ideology.
So you'd be getting rid of Yoshida then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wouldn't hate it. I don't know if he really profiles as the, you know, the guy that you need. Right now, we need a three-hole hitter. Like, the way it all maps out, you need a three-hole guy. I think Suzuki's more of a five- or six-hole guy. At this point, I don't love it, but I'm a Pete Alonso guy. For 3 years, I'm a Pete Alonso guy. Or Nolan Arenado, whichever one they like. But I put out a tweet on my personal account, I think it was yesterday, If you put Alonso behind Devers, I think Devers hits 40 for the first time ever. I think he hits 40 home runs. And if Alonso's done it 3 out of 6 years in Queens, I think he's going to do it at Fenway. I don't know. 53 is the most he's hit. He led the majors the year he did that. But I don't know if that's the ceiling. But I think he hits 40. And then I think Casas, I don't know if he hits 40, if he's still on the roster, but I think he hits the most of any year in his career, at least 30. And then you put Campbell behind Casas now. You see what I'm getting at? I think Alonso's presence in there makes everyone in front of him better and everyone behind him better. And I think Jarren Duran's going to hit the most home runs he's ever hit in his career this year. He hit right, I don't have the numbers up, but right around 20 or so. So I think he could inch closer to 30. This could be the most robust lineup. And I think a deal for Alonso is extremely inconsequential. And he's not the guy I wanted in November. But
yeah, I mean, I definitely agree. I think Alonso would be super fun here. I don't know if you follow Lou Merlone, but he's obviously pretty plugged in as the color guy and, you know, all he does. Someone had tweeted at him, you know, I think we should go get Alonso or something along those lines. And he responded with, no. So I think the tweet actually was verbatim. I think we're close to a contract with Alonso. That's my theory. And he responded with, no. So unfortunately it doesn't seem like there's a lot of hope in the Red Sox, you know, media space for that, but I would love to see it. I think like we were talking about earlier, I think he might fit in a little bit more seamlessly than Bregman. I think a lot of moving parts would have to happen for Bregman to fit into this lineup on a daily basis. Alonso, I mean, if he wants to DH, go ahead and DH. If he wants to rotate with Casas, I'm cool with that. I think they're both pretty meh defenders. So, you know, whoever wants to play the field that day, I really don't care. Whatever Cora wants to do. As long as it's not Romy Gonzalez again or Connor Wong. But, yeah, I think Alonso would fit perfect in the three-hole or four-hole, wherever you want to hit him. And I agree. I think we've seen an uptick with Devers, a lot less pressure on Devers, too. I think Devers kind of feels the weight of the world on a daily basis as being our power guy. You know, and then ever since Stander left, he's never really had a guy to lean on, whether it's offensively or defensively or whatever. I think Alonso would be a pretty solid leader. I think he brings a lot of energy. Get a little bit of Kyle Schwarber to him where he just kind of lights up a room and kind of makes the team feel more fun. And I think the Red Sox need to be fun again. Like, let's make the Red Sox fun again. I'm tired of, you know, being hopeful for a guy like Chase Shugart and, you know, who's that other guy? Nick Sogard to come up. And it's like, oh man, look at this guy. He stole a base. Look at, he got a single in the sixth inning with a guy on second. Look at him. He might be good. Oh no. You know, I'm just so tired of these hopefuls, these, like, our fan favorite should not be Romy Gonzalez. You know, like, everyone's like, oh, I love Romy. He's great. Why is he our favorite player? He should be the Rockies' favorite player. He should have his mustache and go hang out at shortstop in Colorado and be everyone's favorite player in Colorado. We are the Red Sox. Let's have fun, big market players. 2021, Kyle Schwarber. 2018, Xander, he's fun. Like, he's pretty reserved, but he's just fun. He's a fun player. Mookie's fun. Jackie Bradley is flying all over the field. We need to have fun again. Johnny Gomes, Mike Napoli, all these championship teams have one thing in common, and they have personality. 04 was the epitome of personality. Kevin Millar. Like, Kevin Millar is personality in baseball, and we haven't had anything close to that since 2021 in Kyle Schwarber. We bring in these just filler role type players, and they do their job, and they go home, you know, like a lunch pail kind of guy, like they like to describe him on color TV. And I need some energy. Give me something. I've heard Tatis a couple times. It's not going to happen, but like that would change the entire vibe of this Red Sox team. They could do nothing else for the next 3 years. If you had an Alonso or a Tatis or someone with that energy, that spunk, this team, oh man, it'd be a weight off our shoulders.
We've been doing this podcast a long time and we're always waiting for it. We're always waiting for it. That's why I asked you how old you were, because you've made the playoffs one time since you were 17 years old. And we're not acting like a team that is sick of not making the playoffs. Like, that's not the reflection of the moves we've made, doesn't reflect a team that's hell bent on getting in there. And that's what I'm getting at here. And I'm almost at a loss for words. To me, I'm done putting it on Breslow. If he makes a dumbass comment, you know, that I feel like it insults my intelligence, yeah, maybe I'll roast him. But as I kind of got into on the last episode, these are the last three regimes. They're going to sound very similar. All right, go back to the Dombrowski era. This was the front office. Sam Kennedy, Dave Dombrowski, Brian O'Halloran, Eddie Romero, Raquel Ferreira. Dombrowski gets fired. Here's the next regime. Sam Kennedy, Chaim Bloom, Brian O'Halloran, Eddie Romero, Raquel Ferreira. Bloom gets fired. Here's the current regime. Sam Kennedy, Craig Breslow, Brian O'Halloran, Eddie Romero, Raquel Ferreira. They all keep their jobs. And I don't think anything is going to change until Sam Kennedy is no longer in that front office. And I keep saying fire Kennedy. He's not going to like truly get fired because he is a minority owner. But Fenway Sports Group is a large portfolio. You can put him someplace else. You can give him a fancy title and you can get him the hell out of Fenway. I think he's got a low baseball IQ and he doesn't influence this front office in a way that's going to be conducive to winning. I don't see that. And I don't think Breslow has any power in this front office at all. I don't think he can walk in on day one and tell Brian O'Halloran and Eddie Romero what the new direction of the Boston Red Sox is going to be. Because I just don't think he's that powerful. When you go back, when you look at the one multi-year deal we've offered this year so far, Patrick Sandoval, that's the same as the James Paxton deal as 2 years ago. It's the same as the Liam Hendricks deal, despite the fact he's a reliever and the other two are starters. It's the same exact mindset. Now, Walker Buehler is probably the best one-year deal they've signed. And he's a guy I wanted, and I'm glad we have him. But, you know, and it shores up the rotation, but this is still an extremely flawed team. They haven't fixed the defense. They're putting all of their eggs in the Trevor Story's finally going to give you 140 games basket, which I think is stupid. And even if he does play 140 games, how many strikeouts is he going to have? He's probably going to lead the team. Maybe Rafaela strikes out more because his plate discipline isn't super great. But this is the same flawed team that we've had since Dombrowski was here. And I've said this once or twice before. I think John Henry needs to hit the reset button. It won't happen this winter, but if things go sideways, like I can make a case right now that we don't make the playoffs again. Duran probably not going to duplicate what he did last year. There's going to be some regression there. Can Devers hold up? He was, after August 15th, his shoulders were shot. I don't know. Can Tristan Casas stay healthy and not be weird to the point where it's hindering his performance? We're taking a lot for granted with Christian Campbell and Roman Anthony. I don't think it's a sure thing. I mean, Jackson Holliday, look at him last year, number one prospect in all baseball. And he was up briefly, had to be sent down. I don't know how it worked out in the second half, but I'm not ready to sit here and say it's definitely going to work out.
Well, as far as making the playoffs this year goes, I mean, sure, you can definitely paint a picture where it doesn't happen. But I think my take on the Red Sox being a good team this year is probably about 20% based on the roster they put together and about 80% on how weak the American League is. I think pretty much everything that can go wrong last year, aside from like huge major injuries, kind of went wrong last year for the Red Sox, aside from Duran. With the Giolito injury in spring training, that was like their big get for the starting rotation. And then, Houck broke down towards the end of the year and Bayo never really stepped up, and Story went down in Anaheim, and you know, there's a lot of different factors that have came and went out of my mind. But I remember last year was kind of a challenging year at times, and I just think with a little bit of health and with the additions they've made, and you know, they have far more depth in the starting rotation. I don't expect to see Cooper Criswell for 25 starts this year. You know, I just don't see how they're not at least close to the 90 win mark. I just tweeted it out today, and I'm going to stand by it. The Rays suck, Terry. We have a bet going. A private. The Rays are terrible. I think the Orioles starting rotation is laughable. And you know, sophomore slumps are a real thing. Half their team is like 18 years old. Like, I could probably be their dad, so I'm only 23. That we just talked about. The Blue Jays are the Blue Jays. I think the Blue Jays are a little bit scarier than people think. Like, they still have Vlad Guerrero, and they still have Bo Bichette, and they still have Barshow, and they still have Gausman and Berrios, and they just signed what's-his-face Santander. Like, I really think they might be a decent team. But as far as the AL East goes, like, the Red Sox and the Yankees should run that show, in my opinion. I think the Orioles are a solid team, but that rotation isn't going to hold up. You know, you look at the Central. The Central's always been Central. Like, the Guardians just made the playoffs, and they kind of almost made a push to the World Series, and they traded, like, their entire right half of the infield. You know, I don't have a lot of faith in them repeating their kind of season. The Tigers probably going to be a good team. And then the Twins, they always kind of hang around. The White Sox, I'm not going to mention them. Rangers are good. Houston's decent. But again, I'll circle back to my take from a couple weeks ago. Who is definitively better than the Boston Red Sox? Like, I just don't. Who? I want someone, maybe you, Terry, can tell me a team that is definitively and easily going to finish more wins than the Boston Red Sox. Go ahead.
Well, we have to align the stars to make it work. Like, I'm not sitting here right now saying we're a surefire playoff team. You've got three teams in the West, you know, Astros, Mariners, Rangers, that could all win, you know, 92 to 95 games. You know, the Mariners always choke.
You think the Mariners? Yeah, I don't know. Well, anyway, I'll let you go.
You can make the case. You can make a case just like.
They can't hit the ball.
Well,
they need to go get Pete Alonso. We're going to talk about Pete Alonso. They need Pete Alonso as bad as anybody.
Yeah, no, they do. Yeah, they do. But I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say they're only an 82 win team. Like, if players step up, I don't know. I think you can make the case. I can't dismiss them, I guess, is what I'm saying. Cleveland and Detroit and Kansas City. I mean, those are all teams that can win 90. I'm not going to say upper 90s for any of them, but they could certainly win 90, and some of it will be at our expense. And I'm not as down on the Orioles as you are. I mean, without Burns, it's not as good. I'm not going to sit here and say Charlie Morton's going to pick up the ball the way, you know. But I think Morton will be serviceable for them. Zach Eflin, I think, is a quality guy. I wouldn't have I thought that was the dumbest contract the Rays could have signed a few years ago, but it worked out okay. Way better than I anticipated. And you know, I don't know if their young guy there, Grayson Rodriguez, is going to figure it out. I mean, he's got Erod syndrome by the looks of it. Like, he can be amazing. But I think they've got stuff to work with, and I think they can address stuff during the season. So I still have them tentatively winning around 90 or so. And I am a Tampa guy because all their pitching is coming back. And what's our bet? We have a $100 bet. 85 and a half, I think, is where we set it, right?
85 and a half. I took the under on that all day. Okay. And then, like, if we're going to talk about the different teams in the Central and the Mariners and whatnot, you know, oh, they have Julio and they have so-and-so and Terry Carpenter and Hunter Green, what's his face? Riley Green. Are people not saying that about the Red Sox? Like, oh, they have Garrett Crochet. They have Durant. They have Devers. They have Trevor Story. They have Costas. Like, we have the guys. We could easily be a 90-win team just like they could. Of course, every season, you need the stars to align. That's why, the Dodgers aren't going to win the next 10 World Series in a row. Things are going to happen. Someone's going to blow out their elbow. Someone's going to tear an ACL. Things are going to happen. That's why the Braves don't win the NL East every year. Ronnie's going to tear his ACL every other year, apparently. I've never seen that happen, but it happens. Like, the stars need to align for a quote unquote perfect season to happen. I think this might be the year, but you know, maybe I'm young and naive. I don't know. I just grew up seeing the Red Sox win, so I think it's just what I envision. Maybe I'm too hopeful.
Yeah, I think there's three teams in every AL division that can win 90. Like, I can easily make a case that they can win 90. And I think the Red Sox are one of them, don't get me wrong. But I just, we'll see. The one thing, though, that has been true forever, regardless of who the top executive is the Red Sox have never been a second-half miracle team. It hasn't happened in the 2000s. Like, we've either been good all year long or we weren't. Like, so having a good start is paramount. And even in our bad years, we did have pretty decent starts. Like, I think the last three Junes in a row, we went on these disgusting runs where we're like, okay, we could be buyers, you know, and that's been a topic. And then by the time you get to late July, we're halfway out of gas and we were buyers this year, if you want to say that that's what we did. But
sure.
Lots of trash. The Paxton deal, I lost my mind when that happened. I'm like, we're taking another team's trash. And he's going to blow out a random body part here within five starts. And I think it happened in his third start. So,
we got Rich Hill.
Oh, man. Oh, that was so bad. And again, that speaks, that's not Breslow. None of that was Breslow, by the way. Paxton, the front office loved Paxton before Breslow. And even Giolito, they were doing a ton of due diligence that summer when Bloom was still here. And who's the guy we got? We got Giolito. And then the other guy that people credit Breslow for is Andrew Bailey. That was going to happen. He was already being talked about during the summer when Bloom was still here. None of those were Breslow moves. He announced them and pretended they were his, but those weren't his moves. So I just, again, getting back to it, we're not acting like a team that's sick of losing. We're acting like a team that's extremely fearful of change. A team that seems to lack courage. And as I've said in recent episodes, Name one player outside of Soto who's been overpaid this year, who signed way above market. I can't find a contract I truly hate.
No, I mean, it's definitely hard to find a contract that's been, you know, laughable. I think some guys got more than we expected, but like Friedman from the Dodgers says that, like, if you pay a free agent market value, you're never going to sign anybody at market value. You're never going to sign anyone, period. So I think getting uncomfortable with a deal to a Bregman or an Alonso or whatever, go trade for, I don't care. Go trade for somebody, go trade for a right-handed superstar, I think would be just like a breath of fresh air. You know, I say it all the time, play to win. Don't play not to lose. And I think they just play not to lose too often in this front office as of late. And, you know, I think it's time to switch it up, you know, preaching to the choir.
Breslow said exactly that during the winter meetings. You know, it's time to get uncomfortable and go get that right-handed impact bat. Those were his exact words. And it just hasn't happened. But that just leads...
In a perfect world, Terry. We don't live in a perfect world now. Come on. In a perfect world. But we live in reality, so we're getting Randall Grichuk. Okay, that's where he got you.
And we already have Randall Grichuk on the roster. His name's Rob Refsnyder, the right-handed bat that crushes lefties. You know, that's we don't need. He's gonna and he, guess what? He's a terrible defender. He's like a negative 1.5 D-WAR. So he's gonna be your platoon DH. That's the world we're living in right now.
So hear me out. A platoon DH can work. If you look at the Rangers from when they won, like they had, it was Robbie Grossman and Travis Jankowski was like their DH combo, and it works. But you know what else they have? A half a billion dollar middle infield. Nathaniel Lowe, Jonah Heim came up, got hot, Adolis Garcia in right field, then they had utility guy Duran and Tavares playing center field, and they have a lot of pieces. So I think it could work, but if that's their solution to the lack of power in the lineup, then I'm out on the platoon DH. I think Red Sox fans, rightfully so, we're so accustomed to this is our DH, this is what he does every day with JD and Big Poppy, obviously, like such methodical, just pure hitters. You know, I think we're used to that. So I'm open to a platoon DH. If it has to be Yoshida and Grichik, as long as they combine for like, you know, 280 with 30 homers, like I'm cool. But that also means we have to go add someone else like a Bregman to me. But that's probably not going to happen. I just hope it's Bregman. If it's no one else after Bregman, I'm happy. If it's no one else after Pete Alonso, I'm happy. If it's no one else after Tatis, I'm happy.
It's okay if Tampa has a platoon DH, and it's okay if Cincinnati does. It's not okay if the Red Sox do. Like, that's not the world I want to live in.
But why? What if it works? Like, if you're loaded as superstars outside of your DH, right? If your DH, you know, you have a guy like Terry Carpenter in Detroit. I think he hits righties really well. I forget which side he hits from. Whatever it is, Terry Carpenter is a specialist, and I think he mashes. And he's good at his one thing. If you pair him with someone who can smash the other side of pitching, why doesn't that work? Sure, take him two roster spots, but like I just said with the Rangers, like we've seen it work. You just need the roster to be built around that, which it's not right now in Boston.
Well, the reason why it's not acceptable to me is because that will be the only move. You're not getting Bregman. You're not getting Alonso. That's the move. That's what I have a problem with.
Yeah, I mean, fair enough. I mean, that's probably reality. If we're going to live in that probably reality of a universe, then I'm not happy with it. The roster's not built for that. But I don't know. If you look at, I think the Braves do it too. I mean, they have Ozuna, but they platoon in left field. It's essentially another DH spot. They both suck at defense, Kelenic and whoever the other guy was. Like, it can work. I just, we would need to add outside of that. And it's getting late early. As they say, you know, it's almost February. You know, there's not really a whole lot of time to build a roster around platoon DH. So, yeah, I don't know, Terry.
I just that's what I was citing earlier with Cotillo and McAdam. But they think that's the move, and we're not gonna really adequately replace Tyler O'Neill's everyday presence in the lineup. So getting back to it, we didn't solve the defense. We didn't solve the imbalance between righties and lefties. We didn't solve the power gap that you lost. And I saw something somewhere. It was a Twitter nerd. Apparently the Red Sox are projected to rank 28th out of 30 in WRC plus weighted runs created.
I don't think that having potentially two rookies on the opening day lineup and a guy like Crochet, who's really been an elite starter for 1 year, and Hauk, who's really been an elite starter for 1 year, and, you know, Whitlock coming back from injury, and Guerrero potentially being a back end of the bullpen guy, you know, he's had a cup of coffee in the major leagues. Like, I don't think that helps our projections, but yeah, I mean, it's a little bit disheartening to see regardless.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's purely an offensive stat anyway, but we're just, the projections just aren't there right now. Like, you need to add an impact guy, you know, a heart of the order guy. So let me just, this will be the last thing that I'll bring up. If we don't sign Bregman, okay, fine. If we don't sign Alonso, okay, fine. But if Nolan Arenado is still sitting there and you could have had him for way less than those other two guys, half the money roughly annually, and you didn't even go get him, that's the ultimate indictment to me. That's like we got lied to, and they had no intentions whatsoever. And that's going to confirm they were intentionally non-competitive with Soto, intentionally non-competitive with Fried, and grossly non-competitive with Bregman when he was the most attainable of all the free agents that, and again, wanted to come here, and you didn't, you gave a half-ass effort and then let that fifth year scare you. Like, and then you didn't get Arenado.
That definitely would be frustrating. Very frustrating. And at the end of the day, it's not my money. I don't care what it costs. Go get your guy. If we end up paying Arenado, you know, whatever, a year above what the Twitter nerds might think is ridiculous, a bad contract, I don't really care. It's not my money. It's John Henry's money. If that's where he wants to allot his funds, go ahead. I think you got to get a guy. I hope it's Bregman. I hope it's Alonso. But yeah, if we end up with Arenado, I'm pretty content with the offseason, to be honest with you. I just think the front office, I don't know. I think they end up lying because they make promises they can't keep. It's like, oh, we're going to go sign this guy. But then that guy says, I don't want to come here for that money. Sorry. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, we already told them, so we kind of have to. And then they never sign the guy. So I think it's just like empty promises more than straight up lies.
I don't know if you've been on the podcast when I've mentioned this, but do you know why they waited until roughly January 20th last year to finally say, yeah, payroll will be lower this year? Do you know why it happened?
I'm probably going to guess Fenway Fest. They want to sell tickets. Season tickets went out, something like that.
So you're close. Yeah, the season ticket deadline was a few days before that. So if they announced that in December, you know, people will cancel. I mean, I'm sure it wouldn't have been, you know, it might have been 15 or 20% of them that they would have lost. It wouldn't have been everyone, but they didn't want to take the hit. So they were intentionally deceptive for most of the winter. And then, oh, by the way, and the winter weekend was coming up, so they got ahead of it by disclosing it before that. But that's why, like, this is a front office that's, I don't know if you're a Shaughnessy guy, but he points out all the time, he goes, they're way too arrogant for a team that finishes in last place all the time. And I know we were third last year, but it felt like last when that trade, when that trade deadline came up and Danny Jansen was our big fish, him and Paxton. Yeah. It felt like a last place deadline. You could have traded Pivetta and got something decent, you know.
Apparently not, though. Like, no one wants to sign him. I don't know.
Well, they don't want to sign him because of the pick, but I think he definitely had trade value at the deadline. I think you could have got like an eighth-ranked prospect on a team that needed him. It wouldn't have been, you know, a stud by any means, but
yeah.
Look at what the Royals did for Chapman. You know who they got for him, right?
Oh, yeah, Cole Reagans.
So,
well, and that, hey, hang on. Can we trade Chapman for Cole Reagans? That would be cool. That would be like a Breslow masterclass. I'd be all in.
Yeah, he's going to call up a team and be like, you know, in July, and be like, what do you mean we can't have your ace for Chapman? I thought that's how this works.
Can we have Yuri Perez by chance? Can we get Yuri Perez in?
Yeah, so I don't know. We should be having, what's today? Today is, for us, it's Sunday the 26th, almost midnight. But we should be having a much different conversation on January 26th. And we're having a very similar conversation as we have the last several January 26th. So we'll wrap on that. I wish these episodes wouldn't be rant sessions as the last three or four have been, but it's been frustrating, and we've seen four championships. We know what a championship team looks like, and it doesn't look like this one. So we'll be back probably Wednesday or Thursday to discuss any developments. I thought the Alonso ball would have dropped before tonight, but it hasn't. So I'm not going to jinx the start of the week by saying that I'd be surprised if it doesn't by our next episode, because who really knows? But pitchers and catchers, I think, might be what, this Saturday or no, a week from this Saturday. And so it's all got to happen soon. So everyone have a great start to your week. Take care.